This is Kyle with IndieOnTheMove.com, and you're listening to the Jazz Spotlight with Jan Ilunga.
Episode 43.
Welcome to the Jazz Spotlight, the podcast that gives you the insight and tools you need to be in the music industry today. Artists, authors, and top music industry experts give you actionable tips that will help you promote yourself the smart way. Here's your host, Jan Ilunga.
Hey everybody, what's up? Jan Ilunga here from the Jazz Spotlight Podcast, episode 43. And I'm super pumped about this episode because it's kind of a follow-up to episode 13. Maybe you remember with Jerry Goldstein, we talked about how to be your own booking agent and, you know, kind of plan tours and how to get gigs. And today we're going to discuss that topic even more. We're going to talk about how to plan a tour and we're going to go into practical terms. We're going to talk about tools you can use to plan a tour and promote tours. And we're going to talk about a specific tool, IndieOnTheMove.com. IndieOnTheMove is a great website where you can sign up for free and start browsing a database of thousands of venues around the States, festivals, music conferences. And you can do that as an independent musician. So do it yourself, get your hands dirty and dive into the research. Or you can opt for the premium version that it's Do It Together, where you have a professional booking agent that helps you in the research and planning your tour across the US. And my guest today is the co-founder of IndieOnTheMove.com, Kyle Weber, who's going to tell us more about IndieOnTheMove.com, the ins and outs of IndieOnTheMove, how to use it, how it works, how to plan a tour the smart way, and also tips for promoting the tour, how to monetize while performing, and many other great things. And like always, remember that you find the show notes of all the things Kyle mentions and I mention at thejazzspotlight.com/episode43. Before we start with that, you know what's coming, right? Another great jazz club here on the Jazz Spotlight podcast. And today we go all the way to beautiful Amsterdam. So let's hear from this venue.
Hello everyone, this is Gerald from the Noordzee Jazz Club in Amsterdam. We are a club that mixes food with music. You can have dinner at our club starting at 7 and the music starts at 9. We have an amazing lineup every month. For instance, this month we have artists such as Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Harvey Mason, Big Daddy Wilson, and Dr. John. In December we have an amazing lineup also. We have artists such as Frank McComb, Aldo Miola, and many more. If you ever come to Amsterdam and want to experience the amazing atmosphere of our club, please visit our website, noordzeejazzclub.com. Thank you for listening to Jazz Spotlight with Jan Ilunga.
All right, Gerald, thank you so much for this great presentation of Noordzee Jazz Club. A shout out to you and all the people at the Noordzee Jazz Club. And guys, if you live in Amsterdam or you're planning a visit to Amsterdam, which by the way, it's a very beautiful city, you have to stop by Noordzee Jazz Club, one of the finest jazz clubs in the world. And also by now, you probably know that shout outs are a part of the Jazz Spotlight, because I want to take time to thank the people who help the podcast, who take time to leave reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. So today I'd like to thank the Podcast Factory and Emmy Schuber. So Emmy, thepodcastfactory.com, thank you so much for taking time and supporting the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. I really appreciate it. Okay, so now let's hear the great things Kyle has to say. Here is How to Plan a Tour with Kyle Weber of Indie on the Move. Enjoy.
Hey everyone, how's it going? I'm here for another episode. And today we're going to talk about gigs once again. But today we go in depth about the research. How do you look for a gig? And how do you start? What are the things you should think about? And we do that with someone who created something incredible. He's Kyle Weber, the co-founder of IndieOnTheMove.com, the music industry destination for shows and musicians that are looking for shows. Venues are showcased there, festivals are showcased there, music conferences as well. And what is great about IndieOnTheMove.com is that it allows you to sign up for free as an independent musician and look for gigs yourself. Or you can even look for help and hire a professional that helps you getting gigs. Let's hear more from Kyle. Kyle, welcome on the show.
Hey, Jan and the listeners. I appreciate you guys having me, and thank you for the compliments as well. I'm open here for any questions that you have. So if you want to dive in, we can kind of start elaborating on kind of everything that we offer with the site, and we can figure out how it's going to apply to all of the musicians and the venues as well.
Yeah, sounds good. Because actually, you know, I know about IndieOnTheMove.com quite a bit, also because it's one of the resources I've mentioned in that in one of the articles about gigging. And if you guys haven't checked it out yet, you can find it at thejazzspotlight.com/gigsresearch. You find it there, and it's a three-part article. That's the second part that talks about the actual research for gigs. So, Kyle, obviously, you know, some of the listeners might not know about Indie on the Move. So can you tell the listeners a little bit more about that and what he has to offer for both musicians, but also for people who run music venues?
Yeah, absolutely. So IndieOnTheMove.com is a free, interactive, open source music venue database that is primarily geared towards the independent music community. So we service a lot of musicians, venues, promoters, labels, agents, etc. And by independent community, I guess we kind of narrow that down by specifically trying to tailor our venue directory, which is kind of the core part of the site, towards venues that are mostly 1,000 capacity and down. But we do have some stuff that's between 1,000 and 2,000 cap. You know, the stuff that the independent venues, the independent performers, the independent agents, et cetera, are going to be using and reaching out to on a regular basis. So that's kind of where everything really started for us, was with a venue database, first and foremost. So that's kind of where everything expanded from there. So we started pretty much just with that information, a list of venues throughout the U.S., and we provided all of their contact information. So from, you know, their address, their phone number, to the person that books the shows, how to get in touch with them, what are the best practices for getting in touch with them, the type of music they work with, capacity of the venue, the nights that they have music, you know, all the stuff that's going to apply to, you know, an agent, a promoter, or a musician that is going to be interested in possibly setting up a show at this establishment. So from there, we kind of took that information, we added in ratings and reviews to make everything a little bit more interactive within the community. So, you know, you can talk about how great a place is, or, you know, how bad of an experience you had there, and, you know, warn other people not to work with them. But then, basically from there, that sort of idea created a bunch of demand in other sectors of, I guess, kind of the show booking, process. So one of the big ones being, we created a section of the site which we call show availabilities. So if you have a show lined up, but you need additional acts to play on that show, you can actually go onto the site and say, I have X night at Y venue. Here's the type of music that I'm looking for, and here are the details. Our site will not only post it so that people can browse and find, kind of like Craigslist, but we also send geo-targeted emails out to the Indie on the Move community and inform them of these sorts of availabilities. Beyond that, we have a section for band availabilities as well. So if you're a band that's, say, going to Chicago, you can go on, say, I'm going to be in Chicago on X date, and I'm looking for a show. From there, we have a kind of a classifieds listing section where, you know, it's not a specific show or a specific band, but maybe you have gear for sale, right? Or you have, there's somebody that's a blogger and they're looking for new music, or, you know, anything that wouldn't fit in a show or a band availability, you can post a classified post. And then, as you kind of mentioned, from there, we kind of expanded on our venue directory and we started adding in festivals and music conferences. We added in radio listings and press listings. And then one of the newer sections of the site, which is actually a premium feature, while all of that other stuff I just talked about is all free, it's there. We have a college directory that actually lists over 600 universities throughout the U.S. That is a premium feature. But it's only $5 a month or $60 a year. And, what we have within that is then the universities, the contact information for their student talent buyers. So it would be, you know, an email address, a phone number, office hours, et cetera, et cetera. And then from there, we actually kind of added to our press and radio directories. And so we added into our college directory the affiliated press and radio information for those universities so that you can kind of take, you know, more so a three-tiered approach to going after college contacts. You know, the press, the radio, and obviously the student talent buyers. So all of that information is provided there. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, you know, where we are today with the, well, I say free, but obviously the college directory is the paid section. But that's kind of the core of the site now. And then as you mentioned, there's basically two options when you go to the site. You can go in and you can say, I know how to use all this information. I'm going to go in and use it myself. Fantastic. We've got a lot of information for you to use. Or, you know, this is a lot of information. What do I do with it? And then there you can actually reach out and have an Indie on the Move professional kind of help you through the process. So that would kind of go into a consultation. It would go in, you know, we would talk, you know, I guess, you know, booking plan, touring plan. We would kind of evaluate the online presence. We would evaluate your booking pitch. Obviously, that email that's going out to talent buyers and just kind of make sure that, you know, what is going to be going out to the venues when you do decide that it's time to start booking regional tours or to actually start like hitting the road, that you're sending out stuff that is actually going to land those gigs. And those emails are representing you and your act the best way possible. I think that's probably one of the things that a lot of independent artists don't spend enough time looking into is making sure that their presentation is polished and professional. Because at the end of the day, you have so many bands that are trying to land that same show. How do you set yourself apart?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question, Kyle. And I have to ask you, now you mentioned the importance of being professional and look professional. And I have to ask you, do you have a couple of tips for the musicians who are listening to us now about what they should keep in mind in order to look professional?
Absolutely. I mean, two very obvious things are make sure that there's no spelling or grammatical errors in your email, right? Go through it, read it, proofread it, reread it again. Make sure that they are real full sentences and that, like, if this is a paper that you were handing into English class in high school, spend the time and make sure that it actually looks like you spent the time to put it together. Mm-hmm. On the other side of it, the talent buyers are spending their time to read it. They want to know that you spent the time to actually put something together that makes sense. It is, you know, written out properly, and it's going to kind of convince them of what you want them to give you. The other thing is your website. Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, social media in general, all of that stuff is important, but you got to have a .com. Mm-hmm. You just do. Not only does it just look official, but now if you have your website, that is really the domain that you control. You can control the user experience. You can control what they see, how they interact with it, all of your call to actions there. Whereas in social media, you know, Facebook controls that. They decide how people are going to see and interact with the content that you're putting there. So I would say those are probably the two very basic and obvious things that I see too frequently, quite honestly.
Yeah, those are great tips. And actually, you know, you mentioned websites, and it's the perfect timing because maybe you guys remember last week from episode 41, there was web designer Ross Barber on the podcast, and we talked about the website, so the anatomy of a musician's website, and Ross went into details about what should be on a website and also what you should think about when looking for a designer. So whether you want to do it yourself or you want to outsource the process and hire a web designer, Ross really went into detail. So if you haven't yet, after you finish with this episode, check out the jazzspotlight.com/episode41 to get more tips on that. And Kyle, thank you for sharing those tips. And you know, guys, what is great about IndieOnTheMove.com is that Kyle and his brother are actually musicians, so that's where it comes from. It really comes from a musician's angle, like at least in the very beginning. And I have to ask you this, Kyle, since you are a musician and you have been a musician, what do you think are some of the struggles musicians encounter when it comes to gigging, looking for gigs?
Well, I think that it's a balance. It's probably typically the first issue that most musicians are going to encounter, right? Because it's a musician says, okay, well, I love to perform and I want to play as much as possible. Okay, cool. But then the counter of that is, well, you can't play too often in your hometown. You just can't do it because then you're going to run into oversaturation and mm-hmm. you're going to start negatively affecting your performances in that hometown because you're playing too much, right? It's a supply and demand kind of thing. So then the next step is typically then we'll start looking for places outside of your hometown. You know, it could be places that are 30, 45 minutes away. It could be places that are 2 or 3 hours away. And, you know, maybe that's where you want to start kind of building up more momentum so that you can start to continue playing as much as you want, but you're not going back and re-hitting those same fans and expecting them to spend 4 days a week coming to see you perform. It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from there, once you get to that point and you realize, okay, I can't play in my hometown 4 to 5 nights a week, then I think that putting together a plan that's going to allow us to kind of branch out of that is, I think, usually what most musicians are kind of have run into issues with because they're not really sure where to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are very, very great tips. And I actually like especially the one about the oversaturation because I think that it's something that sometimes is overlooked that people don't really think about. But I think you raise a very good point and it's important for you guys that are listening to keep that in mind. And when someone is starting to plan a tour, what are the things you think they should keep in mind? I mean, obviously, everyone is different. Everyone has, you know, different tastes,
yep.
different preferences. But what are the couple of things you think every indie musician should keep in mind?
Well, I mean, the first thing is to keep your expectations at a reasonable spot, right? There's no easier way than to get frustrated when you say, okay, great, we're going out on tour. This is going to be amazing. And then, you know, the crowds aren't as big as you want them to be. The venues aren't as big as you want them to be. So you got to go in and you got to expect, okay, well, if I don't have momentum in that market already, think back about where you were when you started in your local market.
Mm-hmm.
Expect that it's going to be kind of like that, right? Because every market is going to be different unless you already have a buzz going into it.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to build your way up in each one. Unless you find the right people to team up with to make that show bigger than it is. But you know, it's much better to go in with reasonable expectations and be pleasantly surprised than to go in with huge expectations and be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And earlier you mentioned best practices for contacting venues, for example. And one of the things you mentioned in general, it's about the, you know, making sure that your language is you use the proper language, you know, grammatically speaking and everything. And is there something else you would tell to musicians that are about to contact venues, but also, you know, promoters? What are the, you know, how should they go about? What are the best practices in that way? Can you give us a couple of examples?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is you got to keep it short and sweet and to the point,
mm-hmm.
right? But it can't be so short that you don't convince me of what you want to get from me, right? I think that's another issue that people run into a lot of times is they realize that, okay, these talent buyers, they get 50 to 100 emails a day, right? So I don't want to overwhelm them with too much information and send them, you know, a page of text, right?
Yeah.
Of course. But at the same time, what can you convince me of in two sentences? Probably not a whole lot. Two sentences is just enough to tell me who you are and what you want. You're not convincing me of anything. And so like throughout the entire process, you want to think, well, is this message going to get me what I want while still keeping it short and sweet? So I generally tell people you've got 4 to 6 sentences, right? That's not too long, but it's not too short. And within that, you can, you know, provide a personalized introduction, right? Tell me who you are. Speak to me as if I met you on the street. Right. These people get cold pitched all the time. Add in a little personal vibe. Let them know that you spent the time to figure out that John is the booker there, rather than just saying to whom it may concern.
Yeah.
Tell me your name, right? I don't want you to say, hello, we are, you know, the Jazz Kings, or, you know, whatever your band name is. You know, tell me that your name is John and you are with the Jazz Kings. Cool. Now I've got a point of contact. John is my guy. And then from there, it's, you know, it's pretty straightforward. Tell me what you want. Very simple. You know, you want a show. Cool. During some specific time frame, if you have any desired dates, always include them, right? But at the same time, if your availability is, you know, Fridays and Saturdays, October, November, December, well, I don't want you to write out every single Friday and Saturday in October, November, and December. Just tell me that it's Fridays and Saturdays in those months. Because it's easier to consume than for me to look at the dates and then look at the calendar and realize that that's what you were saying.
Yeah.
From there, tell me a little bit more about you, and then tell me what you're going to do for me to make a show at my establishment successful. Right. So I want some resume highlights and I want your promotional plan, and do it all in 4 to 6 sentences.
Yeah. And, you know, sorry that I jump in, but this actually raises another point that we talked about before. On episode 29 with Dave Cusack, he shared a very good tip for musicians that are, you know, looking for gigs. And this is leverage your email list to, you know, kind of show promoters that you have X amount of people, let's say in a 20, 50 miles radius, and you can say that I have access to these people that live pretty close by, so there are good chances that I could get these people through the door.
For sure. And well, and the same thing, if you have a guaranteed draw in a market, talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have market history, you've played here before, tell me about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the newsletter thing is, you know, same as well. I mean, that all kind of ties into your kind of your promotion and your highlights, right? Anytime that you can relate your promotional plan or relate some of your past experiences to this local market, it's going to translate much better to that talent buyer than you just telling me you've got 40,000 people on Facebook. Well, cool. But my first instinct from there is, okay, you're from Berlin, right? And you're writing to get a show in, you know, I don't know, London. And I would say, okay, 40,000 people, I would guess that most of those 40,000 people are in Germany, right? They're not in the UK. And so that's not going to translate the same way.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's a very good point. And I think it's what it's good about having, for example, an email list is where you have the data and you also have, for example, the zip code information, so that you can leverage specific data. Because Kyle had a very good point that, you know, if you have 40,000 Facebook followers or Twitter followers, that doesn't really mean anything for the venue unless you put it in a context, which is a specific geographic area.
Well, and you can use your analytics in your social media to break that down further. That would help it to translate more to say, I've got, you know, 40,000 on Facebook, but 20,000 of those are in, you know, whatever market I'm going after, the United Kingdom. Okay, cool. Well, now that applies to me,
mm-hmm.
right? And actually, before I forget to mention it, the newsletter idea that you just mentioned, that's something to tie into the website as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and you're not the first to mention this on the podcast, because it's one of the most important features.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah. And, you know, for those that have been with me for some time, you have heard me and my guests talk about that. This over and over again about email lists. And again, there are plenty of tools out there. The one I use is called Aweber. And if you want to try it out, you can sign up for just as little as $1. If you go to thejetspotlight.com/getAweber, you can try it there for free. You don't need pretty much any coding skill. It's very easy to implement, but still it's a very powerful tool that, as you've just heard, can also help you in standing out from the competition when it comes to getting gigs.
Yeah.
And Kyle, I have another question for you about gigs before we tie more into Indie on the Move. And it's this: what do you think a band should do or musicians should do once their gig dates have been confirmed? Do you have some more tips on, you know, how to get people through the door or how to a network while on the road, or how to raise the engagement of the audience that's going to be at the gig. Do you have something on that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, once the gig is confirmed, I mean, absolutely start looking into media. You know, granted, a lot of focus nowadays is online, but there's absolutely no reason that you shouldn't be reaching out to press, right? There's no reason that you shouldn't be reaching out to radio, especially if these are brand new markets that you've never been to before. The easiest way to get features on new media is by having a show. Mm-hmm. Shows feed off of media, media feeds off of shows. And it's a really easy way to start to build up your press kit, your resume, all of your connections. So, you know, go in with the plan of reaching out to some people. And, you know, the nice thing too is that a lot of times venues are connected to these local media outlets because, you know, either they know these people or they advertise with them or whatever the case is. So if you have a show at a venue, ask the venue who they work with regularly or what are some of the bigger periodicals to reach out to in the local market. And, you know, there's really not a whole lot of research that goes into it. They give you the answer. All you got to do is put together, again, a nice email that tells these people, hey, I'm going to be performing in your local market. Again, that is what's going to translate to the local community. And then tell them a little bit about yourself. And then just to kind of pull it back into the Jazz Spotlight here, I saw you did an interview with Ari. Mm-hmm. Just very recently.
Yeah.
And he talks, he's got that post that he has about writing a press release is spot on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just take the time, put it together. And then, as I mentioned, you know, you can really build out a lot more contacts just with, you know, a good promotional plan. And, you know, another thing to consider is, well, I guess two things is the other performers that are playing that night. Well, reach out to them. See if you can put together a more concise promotional effort to make that a night of music rather than you just showing up to play a 45-minute set, right? It just creates more appeal. And kind of the last thing is to consider, you know, do you already have people in this market that are excited about you coming? You know, it could be one, it could be five, it could be 10, it could be 100. Well, empower these people to help you with your promotion. Local people are connected to local fans, just like, you know, local bands are connected to local people, right? So use the connections that you have and give these people some incentive to help you promote more. And it can be a free t-shirt. It could be hang out with us after the show. It could be free music. It could be free entrance to the show, whatever the case is. And then these people will feel like they're kind of more involved in what you're doing, and they'll be more inclined to try to get as many people out to the show as possible.
Yeah, that, you know, that's awesome advice. And it's great that you mentioned Ari, and it was episode 36 where the topic was exactly that, how to write a press release and get press. And Ari had some great tips. So if you guys have your touring dates confirmed, make sure to check out episode 36 because Ari had a lot of great things to share, and I'm sure that you're going to benefit from those. And also the second point, Kyle, that you talked about reaching out to locals, it's something that Ezra Brown talked about on episode 7 when he talked about he performs all over the world, and he emphasized the importance of reaching out to locals, especially when you're playing in a city or country where you don't, you know, you have never been, you have no connection, you kind of need help in orientating yourself. So definitely check out episode 7. And I have, you know, you're saying so many great things, and the more I hear you, the more questions come up. And another question I had to ask you is, you mentioned merchandise. And on episode 27 with Dave Kuhl, we talked about different ways that musicians can make money, and merchandise was one of these. And when it comes to merchandise, what are the must-have you think every band should have at their gigs? What items should they have?
I mean, I would say off the top of my head, I want to say CDs and T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're just kind of, they're expected. T-shirts, I feel like T-shirts, there will always be a marketplace for them. Because who doesn't like a cool band T-shirt?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I still always wear what I think are cool band T-shirts, just because that's what I like, and it's unique and it's different. Usually they have fun designs, and it's me supporting something that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So t-shirts are always great. CDs obviously are kind of, you know, moving towards the background a little bit. But I don't think that we're quite at the point now where you shouldn't have CDs at your shows. Not yet. I think that you want to still have that physical product that people can take home if they want to. And there are still people out there that do still listen to CDs, that are very passionate about still listening to, you know, physical products as opposed to listening to MP3s online. So it's still a good thing to have, I would say, as far as CDs go. Just be, you know, I would say be a little bit more cautious with how many you buy initially. You know, the nice thing is that as a result of CDs demand going down, the requirement of quantity to actually get your stuff get pressed has also gone down. I mean, like 10 years ago, it was like you needed to buy 1,000 discs for that company to press your CD. And by pressing, I mean, it's not burnt. It's like professionally pressed. It's the stuff that they play on the radio. Nowadays, I mean, you can do a batch of like 100 CDs and get them pressed.
Yeah.
Which is great. And so, you know, if you're doing a, you know, let's say a CD release show, which typically is going to be the first thing that happens after you press some CDs, you know, maybe you start with 100, knowing that you're already going to be selling, you know, at least 50 of those that night. Or maybe you tie the ticket price into a free disc, and then, you know, you're already getting rid of at least 50 of them. And then from there, you've got 50 left, and you can kind of see what the response is and order more if you need to. The beautiful thing is that once they're pressed, they don't have to be pressed again. You just got to order more.
Yeah.
So I would say that those two things are very important. And then from there, I think it's just a question of really knowing your fans and your niche. What kind of stuff do they dig on? You know, do you have fans that want thongs? Cool. If they want that sort of thing, get them. You know, is it, you know, girl tanks as opposed to guy tees? I don't know. These are all things that would be different according to your fan base. Yeah. You know, hats is, you know, another thing that a lot of people do. You know, I think stickers are good, but don't expect to sell them, right? You're going to be giving those out for free. But yeah, I think that the biggest money makers are still going to be your music and the t-shirts.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also, one thing that you guys should think about, Carl mentioned tees and CDs, and, you know, people love memorabilia. So when people are at gigs, they like to go home with some souvenir, with something that will remind them of the great night they had at your gig. So even if you're, you know, obviously, Carl is right, CD sales are decreasing, but still people love and enjoy memorabilia. So it's something that you should keep in mind. And you know, guys, we've been up for about half an hour now, and you hear Kyle's enthusiasm. And Indie on the Move is not only a great resource for musicians looking for gigs, but it's also the mirror of this enthusiasm, the passion for what Kyle and his brother and their, you know, their staff are doing. And it's a great contribution to the music community. And now we've talked quite a lot from the musician's perspective, but what about music venues? For example, how do you get the information for music venues on Indie on the Move? And also, if maybe there is some venue owners that is listening to us and loves the idea of being featured on IndieOnTheMove.com, what can they do?
Cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, we are open source and we are completely interactive. So if any listeners know of venues, again, today we primarily cater to the U.S. So it is U.S. based only as of now. But if you know of venues that do regularly do live music and we don't have them listed, just write in. And that can be the venue owner. It could be the booker. It could be the manager. It could be a band that's played there. It could be a fan that likes to go there. We are open to information. So all you have to do is just click the contact button on the bottom of the site, select the option that is add venue, and just inform me of any information that you know about the venue. It could be as simple as the name and city that it's in. I'll go and find the rest of it. Or if you know all the information, fantastic. Makes my job easier. Send me what you know. And, you know, as far as, you know, where did all of this stuff actually come from? As Jan, you had mentioned, you know, the site stems from my band, Zelazoa. Mm-hmm. We toured kind of all over the US. We actually went to Europe a couple of times, never made it to Finland, but we did make it to Sweden and Norway and Denmark one time as well. And so from our tours, we had put together, you know, a list pretty much of all of the venues that either we had played, ones that we had heard of, ones we were in contact with and weren't able to kind of work stuff out. And we just kind of saved it because, you know, it might come in handy the next tour. And then we got to the point where we had so much information, it was like, well, you know, this would really be valuable to a lot of other musicians that maybe haven't spent 3 years touring. So maybe we can just put it together. Of course, we had to spend some time organizing it, go back through, get rid of the places that had closed or renamed. And then we just decided to publish it and make it interactive so that, you know, people could add on to it. Kind of, you know, going back to the idea of the community input, the interactivity, the open source, all of that good stuff. And so we initially launched with about 950 venues. And today we are rapidly approaching 6,500 music venues. And, you know, keep in mind, these are listings that are regularly checked, regularly updated. We spend an awful lot of time making sure that the information we have is as accurate as possible, because it really doesn't do us much good or you any good to have, you know, 20,000 venues and half of their information is not correct, or half of them don't do live music anymore because they've closed over the last couple of years. So we are regularly checking, verifying all of this information to ensure that we can save you as much time as possible. From a venue's perspective, though, what is the benefit? Well, I mean, one, you can certainly be sure that you're not going to run into a lack of band options. Mm-hmm. We have over 50,000 members to our community now that are always actively searching for shows, actively touring regionally, actively touring nationally, and
a variety of music genres. You have rock, jazz, blues.
Oh yeah, yeah. We cater to everything from, you know, cover bands to metal bands to jazz bands to singer songwriters to rock to pop. It's all good. We do our best to include as much information as possible. So don't feel like if it's a jazz venue that you don't fit. Well, you do. There's plenty of jazz performers out there that are looking for this same information, and the same applies for all genres of music.
Definitely, Kyle. Thank you so much for reaching out to those that are listening to us who perhaps run a venue or work at a venue and would like to be part of IndieOnTheMove.com. And guys, another great thing about IndieOnTheMove is their blog, because there you can find some pretty interesting posts, obviously about, you know, related to touring, but also different art aspects of the music business. Things like, you know, how to use photos on your website, or what is success, and many other great things. So if you haven't yet, check out IndieOnTheMove.com. Kyle, I want to thank you so much for being here on the show and telling us more about this great tool for artists and music venues. And, you know, man, keep it up. You are doing a great job, man, really.
Thank you so much, Jan. And I want to say thank you for hosting me. And I just want to let all of the listeners know that, you know, if you do have any questions, as I mentioned, about the website, about the content that we provide, there is a contact button on the bottom of every page. Don't hesitate to reach out. If, you know, you want to be a contributor to the blog, you feel like you've got some valuable content, reach out. If you've got venues to add, reach out. I mean, we're always open to hearing community input, and you know, we certainly realize that the community is what supports us. So we want to try and tailor everything that we do as much as possible to helping you guys, you know, achieve what you're looking to do.
Yeah, and you know, guys, if you're on social media, make sure to follow Indie on the Move.
Oh yeah, that stuff. That's right. Yeah, Indie on the Move on Twitter, Indie on the Move LLC on Facebook, and I mean, pretty much just look up Indie on the Move and you'll find all of our stuff.
All right, we are back. Kyle, thank you so much for all the advice you gave out, all the great tips, and for the amazing work you guys at IndieOnTheMove.com do. You guys rock. It's really great. Keep it up. All right, guys. So as a sneak peek about next week, about the next episode, it's going to be awesome, simply amazing, because we're going to talk about how to build connections. So if you want to network with people in the music industry, even if you don't know anyone, you're just starting out, we're going to help you out with that, because I have a great guest who's gonna tell us how to do that and how to start connect with not only with people in the music industry in general, but with influential people, so with influencers. So you guys only have to wait until Tuesday. It's gonna be awesome episode. I'm sure you're gonna love it. And I'm gonna let you with a final resource, a free resource that I'm sure is gonna rock your world. If you've read my post about tools for creating amazing visual content, and by the way, if you haven't, you find it at thejazzspotlight.com/design-tools. You find it there. It's amazing. If you read that, then you know that Canva, it's one of the tools I've mentioned there. And I want to share this news with you because Canva has just launched a great resource, its own design school, and it's free. And you can learn more about things like choosing the right font, color relationships, how to enhance your images, and a lot more. So you can find it at designschool.canva.com, and you will find again all the links at the show notes, like always. In this case, thejazzspotlight.com/episode43. I'd like to thank you again for being with me today and for making me part of your day and taking me with you, whether you are at the gym or going for a walk or just sitting and relax with a glass of wine. I'm Yanni Lunga and this is the Jazz Spotlight. Thank you for listening and I'll be back with you next Tuesday. Take care.